Osho, The Book of Wisdom, Volume 1. Discourses on Atisha's 7 Points of Mind Training. Given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 15.
The first question. Bhagwan, you must have told us so many times already, but I still don't get it. What is the seed of desire? Is it only in the existence of mind? And how is the desire in the body for sex related to the mind? Anurag, the energy called desire has been condemned for centuries. Almost all the so-called sins have been against it. Because desire is life, and they were all life negative. Desire is the very source of all that you see. And they were against all that which is visible. They wanted to sacrifice the visible at the feet of the invisible. They wanted to cut the roots of desire. So there is no more any possibility of life. A tremendously great urge to commit total suicide has dominated the humanity down the ages. I have a totally different concept of desire. First, desire itself is God. Desire without any object. Desire without goal-oriented. Desire unmotivated. Pure desire is God. The energy called desire is the same energy called God. Desire has not to be destroyed. It has to be purified. Desire has not to be dropped. It has to be transformed. Your very being is desire. To be against it is to be against yourself and to be against all. To be against it is to be against the flowers and the birds and the sun and the moon. To be against it is against all creativity. Desire is creativity. The Eastern scriptures are perfectly right when they say God created the world because a great desire arose in him. A desire to create. A desire to manifest. A desire to be many from one. A desire to expand. But these are only metaphors. God is not separate from desire. Desire means a longing, a great longing to expand, to become huge, to be enormous, as huge as the sky. Just watch people, watch desires, and you will understand what I mean. Even in your ordinary desires, the basic thing is prajnā. The man who wants to have more and more money, in fact, what really he wants is not money, but expansion. Because money can help you expand. You can have a bigger house, you can have a bigger garden, you can have this, you can have that. Your territory will be bigger, your freedom will be bigger. With more money, you will have more alternatives to choose. The man who is after money may not know why he is after the money. He may himself think and believe that he loves money. But that is only on the surface of his consciousness. Go deeper into his unconscious. Help him to meditate and you will be surprised. And he will be surprised that the desire for money is not really desire for money. It is desire to expand. And the same is the case with all other desires. A man wants more power, more fame, longer life, better health. But what they are desiring in these different things? The same. Exactly the same. They want to be more. They don't want to remain confined. They don't want to be limited. It hurts to feel that you are definable. Because if you are definable, then you are just an object, a thing, a commodity. It hurts that you have limitations. Because to have limitations means to be imprisoned. But all these objects of desire, sooner or later, disappoint. Money becomes possible one day, and yet the expansion has not happened. Yet you have a little more freedom of choice. But that does not satisfy. The desire was for the infinite, and the money cannot purchase the infinite. Yes, you have more powers. You are more well known. But that doesn't really matter. In the long range, millions of people have lived on this earth and were very famous, and now nobody even knows their names. Everything has disappeared into the dust, dust unto dust. not even traces are left. Where is Alexander the Great? What he is? Would you like to be a dead Alexander the Great or an alive beggar? Ask yourself. And your being will say it is better to be alive and be a beggar than to be dead and be the Alexander. If you watch carefully, money, power, prestige, nothing satisfies. On the contrary, they make you more discontented. Why? Because when you were poor, there was a hope that one day the money is going to happen and all will be settled and settled forever. And then you will relax and enjoy. Now that has happened. And there seems to be no sign of any relaxation. In fact, you are more tense than before. You are more anxiety-ridden than before. Money has bring few blessings, but in the same measure, it has brought many curses too. You can have a bigger house, but now you will have lesser peace. You can have a bigger bank balance, but also you will have a bigger madness, anxiety, neurosis, psychosis. Money has brought few things which are good. In the wake of it, many other things have arrived which are not good at all. And if you look at the whole thing, the whole effort has been a sheer wastage. And now even the hope that the poor man can have, you cannot have. The rich man becomes hopeless. He knows now the money will go on increasing and nothing is going to happen. Only death, only death. He has tasted all kinds of things. Now he only feels a tastelessness, a kind of death has already happened, because he cannot conceive how to fulfill that desire of expansion. But desire in itself is not wrong. Desire of money, desire of power, desire of prestige are wrong objects for desire. Let it be very clear. By having wrong objects of desire, desire itself does not become wrong. You can have a sword and you can kill somebody. That does not make the swords anything wrong. You can also save somebody from the same sword. The poison can kill, and the poison can become medicine too. In the right hands, the poison is nectar. In the wrong hands, the nectar is poison. This is the essential wisdom of all the Buddhas, of all the ages. What the priests say is one thing. What the Buddhas have brought to the world is totally different. It is diametrically opposite. desire has to be purified, transformed, because it is your energy. You don't have any other energy. How to transform desire? The one way, the ordinary way, the mediocre way is to change the object. Don't go after money. Start going after God. You are frustrated with money. Become religious. Go to the church, to the temple, to the mosque. Let your desire have a new object called God, which is as illusory as the object called money, even far more illusory. Because what do you know about God? Money, at least, is something visible, objective. You have known it, you have seen it. What do you know of God? You have only heard the word. God remains a word unless experienced. God remains an empty word unless you pour some content into it through your own existential experience. People, when they are frustrated with the worldly desires, start changing the object. They start making otherworldly objects for desire, heaven, paradise, and all the joys of heaven. But it is the same trick. The mind is again befooling you. This is not the way of the intelligent person. This is the way of the stupid. What is intelligence? Intelligence means insight that no object can fulfill your desire. No object, I say, and I say categorically, no object can ever fulfill your desire. Your desire is divine. Your desire is as big as the sky. Even the sky is not a limit to it. No object can fill it. Then what is to be done? The intelligent person stops desiring objects. He makes his desire pure of all objects, worldly, otherworldly. He starts living his desire in its purity, moment to moment. He is full of desire, full of energy, overflowing. His ordinary life becomes so intense, so passionate, that whatsoever he will touch will be transformed. The baser metal will become gold, and the dead tree will come to bloom again. It is said of Buddha, wherever he will move, dead trees will start growing leaves. Out of season, trees will bloom. These are beautiful poetic expressions of a certain metaphysical truth. Buddha is pure desire, just desire, not desire for anything. He has abandoned all objects. Let me remind you, First he abandoned the world. He was the prince. He was born to be a king. Seeing the futility of money, seeing the futility of all kinds of relationships, seeing the futility of all that the world can give, he was only 29 years of old. He escaped. He did well, because after 30 it becomes more difficult, more and more difficult. Hippies are right, they say, don't believe a man beyond 30. Buddha escaped in right time. 29 exactly he was. Because the more you become experienced in the worldly ways, more cowardly you become. Religion is for the courageous. Religion is for the brave. Religion is for the young. Those who are still able to take the risk, those who are still able to gamble. Buddha escaped. Seeing the futility, he escaped in search of God, in search of truth. He replaced his desire of the world by the desire of God, truth, nirvana. For 6 years he worked hard. By the time he was 35, he was utterly spent. He had done all that was possible, humanly possible to do. He fasted for months, meditated, practiced yoga. And in those days there were different kinds of schools. He went from one teacher to another, from one school to another. He practiced all possible methods. And one day it suddenly flashed. He was crossing the river Niranjana. A small river it is. When I went to see the river, I could not believe the story. The story says that he could not cross the river Niranjana. He could not swim it because he was so weak. The river is so thin. The river is so small, but he must have been very weak. Years of fasting. It is said that he had fasted so long that you could count his bones, his ribs. He had remained simply bones. He was a skeleton. His stomach has completely disappeared. His stomach and his back had become one. Must have been really weak. Could not cross the river. Was hanging with the root of a tree, having no energy to get out of the river. In that moment, a great insight happens. Insights happen only in such moments when the frustration is total. When the disappointment is complete, when the disillusionment is utter, when there is nothing left to hope, in that moment he saw the pointlessness of it all. The worldly objects are meaningless. He had all of them and they did not satisfy. And those other worldly desires are just as foolish as the worldly desires. In that moment, in that insight, he became objectless. Let me tell you, the scriptures report it very wrongly. They say in that moment he became desireless. But try to understand what I am trying to convey to you. He became objectless, not desireless. You cannot become desireless. Desire is your very life, your breath, your heartbeat. Desire is your being. But certainly a transformation happened. He became objectless. This worldly, the other worldly, all desires in toto disappeared as objects, not desire as energy. There was no object. Pure energy was felt. A desiring for nothing. A pure desire moving nowhere. A pure desire here now. That very night he attained enlightenment. Having nothing to desire, he rested under the tree, fell asleep. For the first time, he really slept. When there is nothing to desire, there is nothing to dream either. Because dreams are reflections of your desires. Dreams are reflections of your frustrations. Dreams are reflections of your repressions. Dreams reflect your day life. That night there was no dream. It was a dreamless, deep sleep. Patanjali says, dreamless, deep sleep is closest to samadhi. Just one step more and you have come home. And that one step happened early in the morning. Rested, Buddha opened his eyes. For the first time in his life, there was nowhere to go, nothing to do. For the first time in life, he must have been at a loss. Now what? There was nothing to cling, nothing to hold on to. There must have been an utter emptiness. Time must have stopped. There was no program anymore. Every day he used to get up with so many ideas to be practiced, so many methods to be cultivated, so much religious rituals to be done, and all that. Today there was nothing left. Utter emptiness. But do you think he died? No, he was born. Objects were not there. Now the desire was pure. Just a throb, a pulsation. just a passion for nothing in particular. Resting under the tree with open eyes must have been seeing the sky in the east becoming red. And then the sunrise. And with the rising sun. And with the sky turning red. And with the last star of the night disappearing. He became enlightened. What does this word enlightenment mean? It simply means desire was freed from all objects. He became pure love, compassion, pure life. And this pure life has tremendous beauty and ecstasy. And with this pure life, you have attained the infinite. Desire remains small because you confine it to small objects. Desire remains small because you desire small things. Seeing it, people start desiring big things, but big things are also small things. However big they are, they have limitations. Just think of your God, how big He is. Egyptians used to say He is 7 feet tall. Nothing much. There are many Dutch sannyasins here. Whenever I see a Dutch sannyasin, I remember Egyptians, Egyptian gods. Indians say He has 3 faces. So what? Our politicians have 1,001 faces. And everyone has many faces. 3 only. When you talk to your wife, you have 1 face. When you talk to your girlfriend, you have another face. When you talk to your servant, is still another. When you talk to your boss, is still another. Just watch the whole day how many faces. And God seems to be very poor. Only 3 faces. How He manages only with 3 faces. All concepts of God are bound to be limited. Concepts as such are bound to be limited. Even if you say He is infinite, what do you mean? What do you mean by infinite? Try to comprehend the meaning of the word infinite and you will be in a difficulty. Even your word infinite will be found to be finite. You can say He is unbounded, but just think, what do you mean? Somewhere the boundary must be. How it can be that one can go on and on and on? There must be a boundary. Maybe it is very far away, far, far away. Maybe you will never reach it. But what do you mean by unbounded? You simply mean unmeasured, nothing more. What do you mean when you see the ocean is unfathomable? Do you think there is no bottom to it? The bottom is there, we may not have fathomed. Our ways of measurement are small. Our yards are small. Any word that we can use is bound to remain limited. Hence, those who have known God, they say nothing can be said about him. Buddha even did not say this much, that nothing can be said about him. Because he said, if you say nothing can be said about him, you have already said something. You have already defined him. Nothing can be said about him is a statement. And all statements define. You can move from small objects to big and very big objects, but still your desire, your life will not feel fulfilled. It cannot feel fulfilled unless it is really infinite, not in conceptions, but in experience. Unless you taste the infinity of existence, desire is beautiful. There is nothing wrong in it. Only free it from objects. Freedom from objects and desire is divine. Anurag, you say, you must have told us so many times already, but I still don't get it. Just by my saying, you are not going to get it. You will have to move into experience. It is not a philosophical system of thought that I am conveying to you. I am only pointing towards a path. The path has to be followed. You will not get it just by listening to me. Yes, you can get it if you sit silently by my side. You can get it in the intervals. When I am here and you are here and no word intervenes. Words don't communicate. On the contrary, for the higher things, they become barriers. For the lower things, they are bridges. The higher you move, the less and less they are bridges, more and more walls. You say, you must have told us so many times already, but I still don't get it. I will go on saying it, Anurag, again and again. But remember, you will not get it just by listening to me. You will have to be something like me. You will have to imbibe me. You will have to digest me. It is not something verbal that is happening here. It is something existential. It is a love affair. I am not a teacher. I am not teaching you anything. I am simply imparting you something. What has happened to me, I am inviting you to partake of it. Be my guest. Let me be your host. And if you can even be a guest for a single moment, that which has not been understood for so long will be immediately understood. Not only that it will be understood, you will be surprised that how you went on missing it. It is so simple. To have understood it would have been simple. But it is a question of energy communication. And slowly, slowly, I will turn the commune into an energy communication. Words can take you only so far. Then it has to become a meeting of energies. You have to be electrified by me. You have to allow my pure desiring, my pure energy, objectless it is. I don't desire a thing. I am simply desire. If you allow yourself to come in contact with this energy, there will be a transformation, a turning point, a conversion. You say, what is the seed of desire? There is no seed of desire. Desire is the seed of all. Desire is the ultimate seed. God desired to be many. God desired to expand. God desired to create. Desire is the seed of everything. If you ask me, I will say God is desire. That's why he could desire. Only desire can desire. You ask, is it only in the existence of mind? No. Mind has only a very tunnel vision. Mind is like you are hiding behind a door and looking through the keyhole. Yes, sometimes you can see a bird on the wing, but for only a split second and it is gone. You see somebody passing by, a beautiful woman, a beautiful man, or a dog, just for a moment and it is gone. A moment before it was not there. A moment afterwards it is no more there. That's how mind creates time. It is a keyhole. You see the bird on the wing. And you see only for just a second. Before that it was not. Do you think it was not? It was. But for you it was in the future. Because it was not in front of your keyhole. And after a moment it is no more again. Do you think it is no more? It is still. But for you it is past. Mind is limited. Hence it creates division. Past, present, future. The present is that which for a moment appears on the screen of the mind, and the past is that which is no more on the screen, and the future that is not yet. But let me tell you, all is and all ever is. Nothing ever goes out of existence, and nothing ever comes into existence. Everything persists, remains. Time is a false notion created by the mind. Eternity is truth. Timelessness is truth. Somebody asked Jesus, tell us something more about the kingdom of God. What will be special there? Something unique. Yes, we have heard that there will be pleasure, but pleasure we know, maybe it will be thousand and thousand times more. But we know what pleasure is. We have heard there will be celestial music. Okay, we know something about music. What will be special? And you will be surprised what Jesus said. It is not recorded in the Christian scriptures. But there are few sayings scattered here and there in other scriptures. This is recorded by the Sufis. Jesus said, there shall be time no longer. A tremendously significant answer. There shall be time no longer. This will be special. Everything you have known, but you have not known timelessness. There shall be time no longer means there shall be mind no longer. Mind and time are synonymous. In the ultimate reckoning, time is mind, mind is time. Both are aspects of the same coin. They both disappear together. Drop one and the other is gone also. You ask me what is the seed of desire. Anurag, there is no seed of desire. Desire is the ultimate seed of all other seeds. And you ask, is it only in the existence of mind? No. Mind has only a little glimpse of desire. Just a flickering glimpse of the desire. Mind knows nothing of desire. Mind knows only of desiring this, desiring that. Desiring money, desiring power, desiring prestige. Mind knows about desires of object. When the objects are no more there, desire is no more part of the mind. Then desire is beyond mind. Then desire is simply an overflowing energy. William Blake says, desire is energy, and energy is delight. I have heard a rumor that Sargama is a direct descendant of William James, one of our sannyasins. We have beautiful people here. William Blake is one of the most beautiful persons who has ever walked on the earth. One of the most penetrating mystics. Sargama must have something of William Blake's quality in him. But it may be just a rumor. because I have heard another rumor also that William Blake had no son at all. But that may be applicable only to legal sons. One can have illegal sons. William Blake's insight is true. Desire is energy. Energy is delight. Contemplate over it. Just pure desire. Just overflowing energy. For no particular object. For no destination. That's what you have to remember when you come for an energy darshan to me, for a close-up. Just become pure desire. Just an overflowing desire. For nothing in particular. Don't wait for any experience. Experiences will come, but don't wait for them. If you wait, you will miss. Because when you are waiting for an experience, you are no more in the here now. You have already missed the point. The mind has come in. The object has obstructed the purity of desire. When you are in an energy darshan with me, when you are partaking something of my energy, just be pure desire. Going nowhere, moving nowhere, just thrilled for no reason at all. Just madly ecstatic for no reason at all. And in those few moments, you will have the contact with me. Because those few moments are my reality. But if you are sitting there waiting to have some great experience of light inside, then maybe you may experience some light, but you missed. You threw the diamonds away and gathered the pebbles on the shore. You may be waiting your kundalini to rise. You may have a certain sensation rising in your spine. But what it is? It is pointless. It may give you a kick, a spiritual kick. But then it is gone. With me, be just pure desire, swaying with me, moving with me, dancing with me, allowing me to penetrate you to your deepest core, to the deepest core of your desire, to the very seed. And then something immense, something incredible, something you cannot imagine is possible. An entry of the beyond in you, the meeting of the earth and the sky. You say, is it only in the existence of mind? No, mind is a barrier. It allows desire only little outlets. And desire is an ocean. Mind has to be dropped not to drop desire. mind has to be dropped so that you can have total desire. And you ask, and how is the desire in the body for sex related to the mind? Mind is not separate from your body. It is the inner part of the body. You are separate from the body and the mind both. You are an entity, transcendental. You are a witness of the mind and the body both. But your mind and your body are both one and the same energy. The body is visible mind. The mind is invisible body. The body is the exterior mind, and the mind is the interior body. Hence, sex is not only physical, it is far more cerebral, it is far more psychological than physical. In fact, sex is triggered not by our physiology but by our psychology. The physiology cooperates with it. But deep down, sex comes from the inner body to the outer body. You may be aware, you may not be aware, because you are not aware at all what goes on happening to you. But watch, the first thing about sex happens in the head, in the mind. And then immediately the body is affected, because the body and the mind are not separate. There can be a physiological sex too. That's what happens when you go to a prostitute. It is physiological. It is just a relief to the body. The body is overburdened with energy and you don't know what to do with it. You have to throw it somehow to unburden so that you can feel a little relaxed, because too much energy and you are so uncreative that you don't know what to do with it. You can't sing a song totally. If you can, you will be surprised. The energy has disappeared into the song, has become the song. There is no need to go to the prostitute. You cannot dance. You cannot play on the guitar. You are so uncreative. Prostitutes will exist in the world unless man becomes more creative. And now, in the West, where women's liberation movement is demanding equality about everything, even male prostitutes have come in existence. They were bound to. Because why only female prostitutes? Why not male prostitutes too? Equality is equality. Man is uncreative. Have you observed any time when you are creative, sex disappears? If you are painting and totally absorbed into it, you don't have any sexual desire. Sex simply does not cross the threshold of your mind. It is simply not there. Only in deep creativity people are celibate, in no other way. your saints, so-called saints, are not celibate because they are so uncreative, they cannot be. It is impossible. It is just against the very science of energy. They are doing nothing. Sitting in the temples and the ashramas, repeating Ram, 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 Arsh. Just stupidly playing with their malas. How can they be celibate? How can Brahmacharya happen to them? It happens only when creativity takes all your energy and no energy is left as a tension in you. Poets can be more celibate. Painters can be more celibate. Dancers can be more celibate. Musicians can be more celibate. I am not saying that they are all celibates. I am saying whenever a poet is a poet, because a poet is not 24 hours a poet. It is very rare to find a poet who is 24 hours a poet. Then he becomes a seer. Then he becomes a rishi. Then he is no more an ordinary poet. It is by people like these who were 24 hours poets that great poems like Upanishad, Quran, Gita were born. They are not ordinary poetry. Ordinary poets are once in a while only poets. Otherwise they are ordinary people, maybe far worse. Ordinary painters are only once in a while painters. It is said about a great Indian poet, Rabindranath, that whenever he will have the mood to create, he will close his doors and disappear in his room for days together, 3 days, 4 days, no food, no bath. He will not come out even. Only when his energy has moved into creativity and he is unburdened, he will open his door and come out. And people who have seen him coming out of his room after 4 days of fasting and remaining lost into his creativity have all observed that his face was no more the same. He looked as if he had gone to some other world. He looked so delicate, like a rose flower. He looked so beautiful, so feminine, so graceful, so Buddha-like. But only for a few hours that fragrance will surround him and will disappear. And for months together the mood may not come. Poets are only once in a while poets. And when you read a whole poem, the whole poem is not a poem either. Only few lines here and there are really poetry. Other lines are just managed by the poet. They had not descended. A great poet, Coleridge, died. He left 40,000 incomplete poems. Many times in his life it was asked, why don't you complete these things? They are so tremendously beautiful. And only one line is missing. Just complete one line and the poetry will be complete. But Coleridge always denied. He said, I will not complete unless it comes from the beyond. I am not going to do it. These lines have come from the beyond. I have just noted them down. I am not the writer. I am not the author. I am just a steno. I have simply noted down something from the beyond has dictated, and that one line is missing. I cannot add it, because many times I have tried to add and I have always failed. It looks so ugly. It looks so different, so mundane, so mediocre. It has not that luminosity. When Rabindranath for the first time translated his great book Gitanjali into English, he was a little worried whether the translation has come through or not. English was not his mother tongue in the first place. And second, to translate prose is one thing. It is easy. To translate poetry is very difficult. And more so, to translate poetry from a language like Bengali, which is so poetic. The whole language is poetic. Its flavor is of poetry. He was worried whether the translation has come true to the spirit of my original. He showed it to one great Englishman, C.F. Andrews. Andrews went through it, and just at 4 points, he said 4 words have to be changed. Grammatically, they are wrong. Naturally, Rabindranath changed them. Then for the first time when he read Gitanjali and his poems in a poet's gathering in London, he was surprised. He could not believe his eyes. One English poet, each stood up and said, everything is perfectly right, but only at 4 points. Something is very mundane. Something is not poetic. The whole poetry flows beautifully. At 4 points, the river comes across rocks. With a trembling in his heart, Rabindranath asked, what are those 4 points? And they were exactly the same which C.F. Andrews has suggested. Rabindranath told that these are C.F. Andrews' words. He knows English better than me. Each said, that is right. It is better English, but not better poetry. Grammar is right, but poetry is not grammar. Language is right, but poetry is not only language. Poetry is something that hovers above language and grammars. You please go back to your old words. Ravindranath got his Nobel Prize on this book, Gitanjali. All poets are not always poets. All poems are not poems. Hence, you may not be able to understand what I am trying to convey to you. But whenever a poet is a poet, he is celibate. Sexuality simply disappears, evaporates. And whenever a poem is born into a poet, he is part of God, he is the creator. In that moment, it is impossible to give any object to your desire. Sex is giving an object to your desire. Sex is not pure, cannot be, because the object is always there. The moment sex becomes pure, it is samadhi. Mind and body, both are sexual. The body has come out of sex, and the mind is always hankering for objects. Hence it is sexual. But both can be purified through creativity. My message, my key, my golden key to transform your energies is creativity. Be more and more creative. And slowly, slowly you will see a transformation happening on its own accord. Your mind will disappear. Your body will have a totally different feel. And constantly you will remain aware that you are separate, that you are a pure witness. And that pure witness is pure desire and nothing else. I am not against desire. I am all for desire, but I am not for desires with objects. Let objects disappear. And then you will have a desire like a flame without any smoke. It brings great liberation. The second question. Bhagwan, I understand everything that you say, but still, why my life remains unchanged? Sudas, to understand something intellectually is one thing. And to understand something intellectually is not going to transform your life. You will remain the same. To understand something intellectually is really to deceive yourself. You have not understood. The mind has only pretended to have understood. This is the trick. Because if you really understand it, then change is bound to happen. And the mind does not want any change. The mind is very traditional, conventional, conformist, orthodox. The mind is never revolutionary. It is against all change. And the change I am talking about is a total change. You say, I understand everything that you say. You only believe that you understand. You understand the words naturally. My words are simple. I don't know many words. In fact, if you count, I must be using not more than 400 words, but see the turnout. I am not a man of language. You can understand what I am saying as far as words are concerned. But do you comprehend? That is the question. That is the crux of the matter. Do you comprehend what is being imparted to you? So thus, you must have a very philosophical bent of the mind. Meditate over on this anecdote. A patient of his, a great philosopher in his 30s, eagerly responded at the beginning of therapy to each interpretation of his analyst made by saying, I hear you, I hear you. I am sorry, said the doctor. I did not know you were a little deaf. I am not, I hear you. It means I comprehend, said the philosopher. Well, what is it that you comprehend? The philosopher paused. Jesus, he finally replied, I don't know. Understanding is not the question, comprehension. Understanding is of the head, comprehension is something deeper, of the heart. And if it is really total, then even more deeper, of the being. When you understand something, then you have to do something about it. When you comprehend, you need not do anything about it. The very comprehension is enough to change you. If you comprehend something, it has already changed you. There is no need to do anything about your comprehensions. Please don't try to understand me intellectually. I am not an intellectual. In fact, I am anti-intellectual. I am not a philosopher. I am very anti-philosophic. Try to comprehend. And how one tries to comprehend? How one tries to understand in the first place? Understanding means listening by the head, continuously interpreting, evaluating, judging. This is right, this is wrong, yes, this is true. I have read about it. This must be right because Jesus has also said it the same way. It is so in the Gita or in the Vedas. This goes on, this constant chattering inside that you call understanding. And then out of this hodgepodge, you create a hypothesis. And you think this is what I have been telling to you. Comprehension cannot come this way. This is the way of preventing comprehension. Listen silently. with no inner chattering, with no inner talk, without evaluating. I am not saying believe what I say. I am not saying that accept what I say. I am saying there is no need to be in a hurry of accepting or rejecting. First, at least listen. Why be in such a hurry? When you see a rose flower, do you accept or reject? When you see the beautiful sunset, do you accept or you reject? You simply see. And in that very seeing is a meeting. Don't let your mind wander. Listen silently, attuned. And then something will stir in the heart. Truth has that quality. It stirs the heart. Truth has the quality of being self-evident. It needs no proofs. If what I am saying has anything of truth in it, it will be understood by your heart. But the mind has to give way. And then you will not need to change your life according to it. It will be changed on its own accord. The third question, Bhagwan, what? Patrin, you remind me of a story. A man was troubled for many years with his sore arm. He had been to many doctors and could not find out what was causing the problem. Finally, a friend urged him to see a doctor who was famous for his ability to diagnose illnesses. The doctor was very expensive and he had to wait a long time for an appointment. Finally, he sat waiting in the office. The doctor walked in, handed him a jar and told him to return it the next day with his first morning's urine. Then he promptly left the room. The man was infuriated. He did not even look at me, he thought. And how can he tell what is wrong with my arm from my urine? The next morning, the man is still angry, peed in the jar. Then he had his wife pee in it. Then he had his daughter pee in it. Then as he walked out the door, he saw his dog peeing on a tree and he got some of that also. He gave the urine to the doctor and sat there laughing to himself. Just then the doctor returned the room and exclaimed, "Please, sir, this is no laughing matter. Your wife has been fooling around on you. Your daughter is pregnant. Your dog has worms. And if you don't stop jerking off, your arm will never get better." Now, Patrin, you ask me what? I am not this kind of a doctor. You will have to go to somewhere else. the fourth question, why cannot I feel any wonder in existence? Shivananda, you are too much knowledgeable. You know too much. And all that you know is just holy cow dung. All knowledge always is wisdom is a totally different matter. Knowledge is all rot, junk. You gather it from here and there. It is not yours own. It has no authenticity. It has not grown in your being. You have not given it birth. But it gives you a very gratified ego that I know. And the more you become settled in the idea that I know, less and less you will feel wonder in life. How can a man of knowledge feel wonder? Knowledge destroys wonders. And wonder is the source of wisdom. And wonder is the source of all that is beautiful. And wonder is the source for the search, for the real search. Wonder takes you on the adventure to know the mysteries of life. The knowledgeable person already knows nothing but things that he already knows. He has come to a full stop. He has not reached anywhere. He has not known anything. He is a computer. His mind is simply programmed. Maybe he has MAs, PhDs, D-Lits. Maybe he has been to the biggest education centers of the world. And he has accumulated much information. But that information is destroying his sensitivity to feel the mystery of the flowers, the birds, the trees, the sunlight, the moon. Because he knows all the answers. How he can see any beauty in the moon? Because he knows everything about the moon. And if you say to him that my beloved's face looks like the full moon, he will laugh. He will say, you are simply foolish. How can you compare the moon with your beloved's face? There is no comparison possible. He is mathematically right, scientifically right, but poetically wrong. And life is not only science. And just as Jesus said, man cannot live by bread alone, I say to you, man cannot live by science alone. Few windows for poetic experiences are to be left open. So some sun, some wind, some rain can come from real existence. You cannot be thrilled with life if you are too much full of knowledge. I used to go for a long walk every evening when I was in the university. A professor used to follow me. 2-3 days I tolerated, and then I said, either you stop coming or I have to stop coming. He said, why? I said, you are destroying my whole walk. He said, how? He knew too much about everything, and he will talk. This tree belongs to that species. Now who bothers? The tree is beautiful. It is dancing in the wind. The foliage so young, so fresh. The green of it, the red of it, the gold of it, all is so beautiful. And he is talking about the species. He was a very, very informed man about everything. A bird on the wing, and he will immediately label. He was a great labeler. I said, please, either you stop coming, you are destroying my whole evening walk, or I have to stop. Shivananda, you must be too much burdened. You are, I know you, you are burdened with great scriptures, mountains of scriptures. Nothing can ever surprise you. A man comes into a bar, obviously nervous and obviously in a hurry, walks over to the counter, picks up an empty glass and starts eating it. When he is finished, he goes over to the wall, walks up the wall, walks along the ceiling, walks down the other wall and disappears out of the door. The barkeeper can't believe his eyes. What the hell, he says, is going on here? A man who has been sitting on a bar stool and seen the whole thing says with a shrug of his shoulders, don't worry, I know that guy. It is always the same thing with him. Comes and goes without even saying hello. There are millions of people who are living like this. Miracles are happening all around. But they can't see anything. They are blind with their knowledge. Drop your knowledge. Knowledge is worthless. Wonder is precious. Regain the wonder that you had when you were a child. And the kingdom of God belongs only to those who are able to become childs again. The last question, Bhagwan, I am in a jam. I love 3 women. This is hell. And this has been going on for 3 months. Now what to do? You must be something of a man. One woman is enough. You need legal protection. But if you have tolerated it patiently for 3 months. Wait a little more. Time settles everything. And women are always more perceptive than men. If you cannot do anything, they are bound to do something. John and Mary begin making love in a railway cutting. As their lovemaking progressed, they rolled down onto the railway tracks themselves in the path of the oncoming express. The driver, seeing the two bodies ahead on the line, halted the train just in time. Now, delaying the train is a serious offense, and at the trial, the judge demanded an explanation. "Now look, John," he said, "I am a man of the world, and I can understand you and your girlfriend having a little fun, but why didn't you get out of the way of the train?" "Well, it is like this, Your Honor," said John. "I was coming, the train was coming, and Mary was coming, and I thought that whoever could stop would stop." Enough for today.